Welcome to the Dog Pound Daily Podcast. I'm Stephen Gabitza. Joining me, as always, is Andrew Seipt. Andrew,
11-time podcast guest of the world. It's me.
I'm Andrew back. Just returned from a trip to Vegas. How much money did you bet on the Browns?
Zero, actually.
$0.
I kind of forgot. You know, I was gonna do my I was gonna do my 5-win over, but I didn't. I did bet on the Cavs though. 20 bucks, or I think it was 40 to win 280 for them to win the series, but that was before game two. So I should have doubled down after.
You should have parlayed in the Browns winning the division.
And the Indians winning the World Series. That'd have been crazy. The Browns would cost me that bet too. Like, just as happenstance, that would probably happen.
So as I have come to understand here in the past few minutes off the air, you have a bone to pick with a certain Browns player.
I do. Well, I think we're going to talk about both of them here in this podcast, but the main one that I actually wrote an article on about a week ago is Corey Coleman. Is once again being held out in training camp, I believe, for the second straight year until training camp. He's missing.
I mean, he fell on the ball. It was kind of a freak thing.
I understand, but like, dude, you're getting hit by 300-pound people and you're going to fall on the ball. That would it knock the wind out of you?
Someone was on top. I mean, at this point, it's almost just precaution.
Well, and he's got the hamstring injury too. And like, yeah, these soft tissue injuries happen from time to time, but this is the second year now where this guy's shown flashes, but then not been able to stay on the field. And at some point, the Browns are going to need a number one receiver. And if he's going to be healthy and be that receiver, like I said, he's got to be healthy to do it. So there's going to come a time where we need to decide, can we even count on him to be a number one receiver? And so far, he's just been a little bit too nicked up for me to say that he's a number one.
Well, this time of year is tough because if you're even remotely hurt like Myles Garrett, they're going to put you on the bike.
Yeah. And again, that's another thing too, but he's not even on the bike. You know, he might be in the meeting rooms, but they literally said he's just out until training camp.
They took pictures of him on media day.
Maybe that's an extreme precaution, but I mean, you saw what he did last year when he was out with time. You know, he broke his hand and tried to come back, and by then the season's over, but there were still really no flashes after that week two game. So I think you just got to get this guy in the field. He missed, I think, the first two preseason games last year too. That's valuable time against NFL-type speed that you can't get back. I mean, how long is this guy going to stay hurt before we can actually utilize him on the football field?
Or at least think if he is, you know, struggling this year, is the whole receiving corps doomed? Or is there anyone who you think could step up and shine? Or is it just another situation of the Browns missing out on a position?
Yeah, I wrote an article about how the Browns probably missed Terrell Pryor more than anything. And I think it's true now. With Corey Coleman being out until training camp, I think it just raises that red flag or makes that need a little bit more glaring at the wide receiver position. Excuse me. Even if you were to bring Terrell Pryor back on a 1-year deal and the Browns swallowed their pride and took him back, you know, you're a better receiving core with Kenny Britt, with Terrell Pryor, than you are with a hurt Corey Coleman and Kenny Britt. And then Ricardo Lewis, Rashard Higgins, those kind of guys. I think they're really banking on one of those young guys to step up, but it's going to stem from the quarterback play. But I don't see any of those guys really that are bound to make an impact like losing a Terrell Pryor is.
I mean, at this point, they just drafted him. I mean, you know, Lewis, Higgins, Coleman, and Jordan Payton just drafted him last year. So based on the way they're kind of running this rebuilding process, you kind of have to give him another year.
Yeah, receivers take a while to develop. I get that. But they're also
the
players.
And the quarterback
that
play last year was pretty bad.
Agreed. And I'll always give them that point. But to be fair, there are receivers that come on right away that don't have good quarterback play. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that Eli Manning's a bad quarterback, but Odell Beckham came on the scene as 11th overall and hasn't turned back since he got healthy in his rookie year. I think that's part of the expectation they had with Corey Coleman, and we saw a flash of that. But again, when you get hurt, you just start to lose favor with the fan base, with the coaches, because you just can't be counted on to give meaningful reps, whether it's in practice or the game. So you almost want to start giving those reps to younger guys or look to trade them, because same with Josh Gordon. I mean, I have zero faith that Josh Gordon's going to be active on the Browns once if he's ever reinstated, because there's no team. You can't count on the guy. So why try playing him?
Yeah, I see about a negative 10% chance Josh Gordon plays another game in a Browns uniform. Because even if he is reinstated, there's going to be the people that say, oh, we have to give him a chance. It's like, were you off the earth for the past 3 years? Like, there's no point to keep. And I was one of the last holdouts of, well, you might as well play him. But
I want to give him a chance. Obviously, they want to play him. Like, as an objective observer, there's no reason they should let him play on the team or in the NFL. I mean, the guy's been given every chance, and I get that smoking weed is not anything near like beating a woman or something.
It's
like
it's a simple rule to follow.
Yeah, and that's my point to it is you've got all these guys that are doing much worse things, but you're doing something that you can literally control so easily. You know, there's guys that I guarantee you smoke weed in the NFL that pass their drug test no problem, knowing full well when it's coming. And this guy's being tested every day, so you can't stay clean for your whole life, maybe? I mean, you've got millions of dollars at stake. Like, make a decision, man. And if you still can't get clean after that, how are we going to count on you to learn a playbook and be a good guy in the locker room? Like, it's just a major character flaw.
Yeah, the way I see this playing out is that Goodell's going to randomly reinstate him one day, and Browns fans are going to go nuts, and the front office is just going to, like, trade him.
He should just sit on his contract.
Just to a good team, and people are going to freak out. The Browns are not going to be great, because obviously, and he'll have a few touchdowns and it'll just be a cycle. But
no, the worst thing that would come of that, because that's a real situation that I think is going to happen. Someone's going to trade for him and someone's going to get a Josh Gordon that wants to play for them. But the worst part is that like every national media guy would be like, just another player that the Browns let get away. Just another homegrown talent that they let get away. Like, oh yeah. Because everyone in the world wasn't calling for Josh Gordon to never play another, like that he wasn't going to play in the NFL. And when he does, the Browns should move on, that it should be a clean break from both sides. But I guarantee you the second that they do, he's going to go out, ball out. Everyone's going to come back and say the Browns should have never traded Josh Gordon. Because even another example of that is the Cavs game too. After game three, when they won game four, you turn on ESPN, it's nothing but, oh, the refs cost Golden State an NBA championship, and the Cavs have no chance. Like,
that's just the cycle of national media that's more about shock value than real analysis. When you look in the stats, just really quick on the Cavs, like Warriors had more foul shots. Draymond Green was allowed to stay in the game, and it's just
yeah, it makes it. But that's
how
it
always
sense.
Is. It's yeah, cut Josh Gordon. He does well. Oh, Browns are dumb. Like,
yep,
it's the Captain Hindsight from South Park who just
yeah.
Only solves things after the fact.
That's a funny one. Yeah. Damned if you do and damned if you don't. If they keep him and he doesn't play, I mean, it's a guy or team wasting a guy's career or a guy wasting his own career. It's, I don't know. I think we're getting a little bit away.
We can cross that bridge when it comes, if it ever does. Do you think, getting back to the active receiving core, is there anyone that you want to see the Browns pursue? Or do you think it's, you know, getting Kenny Britt kind of just that's who they're going with this year and seeing how it works?
I like Eric Decker. My only question with him, he's had a little bit of an injury history too. He's always just been kind of dinged up though. I don't know how many games he's missed, but I know it's not an extensive amount. But he's coming from a situation in New York that is what the Browns are exactly 1 year removed. So I don't know his willingness to want to come to a team like that. He'll probably be better suited for a team. I think of Denver right away that needs kind of a slot. They need a good slot receiver, and Eric Decker's either a number two or a slot receiver. Obviously Kansas City's not going in that direction, having just cut Jeremy Maclin, and he just signed with Baltimore. So I think the Browns, if they want to make their money talk and give a guy a chance to be a solid number two receiver for an up-and-coming team that, if with good quarterback play, could make some noise in the division, I say go for it.
You're getting me excited with the tidbit. Could make some noise in the division.
I tried to use my words very carefully there. Cautiously optimistic. Well, if I say, oh, they're going to be playoff contenders.
That's a hot take.
Yeah, it's a very
hot take. It's too
hot
for this.
That's sizzling. Sizzling hot.
You can even say, I think the Browns are going to beat the Steelers opening day, and you'll be on the front page.
They're not. going
to. Oh, they will. I'll be there.
Maybe. Remember when Spencer Landon got cleated in the face by Antonio Brown on opening day a couple years ago? That was pretty awesome.
I guess.
That was pretty cool.
I mean, it was cool, but it was kind of just like the epitome of the season. Week one. Yeah.
And Terrence West had 100 yards rushing, and then he was traded by week three. Ben Tate, that was his only game. And then Crowell and Terrence West were like...
chronically injured Ben Tate.
Terrence West and Crowell were like pretty good. And Ben Tate like got cut out of the rotation and started bitching about it. And there it goes. There goes Ben Tate, who's never played a snap in the NFL again. That was a great year for free agents, by the way. Dwayne Bowe, Ben Tate.
Hartline.
Oh, Hartline. Man, that's another one.
Who wasn't horrible. He is what he is. He's like
He had a crazy first down catch, I remember, at the end of one game that was like... Yeah, I know.
Man, he had a nice catch for a first down. Nice so you're talking about your son's football team who's like 0-10.
Joe Giravicious, man. Like, that guy just got first downs. Possession receiver. Very cerebral.
Every receiver should be a possession receiver.
Yeah.
I like that Coleman guy, but he can't get first downs. Like, what does he do? That Dwayne Bowe deal, I think, is maybe why the Browns, you know, kind of got a, not young, but like Kenny Britt, who's like still under 30, as opposed to like a lot of fans just see like a big name. They're like, why don't we sign him? And it's like, well, those are the Dwayne Bowes of the world. Although, to be fair, Dwayne Bowe was clearly past his peak.
Yeah, that was I think at the time we were all excited because you're like, oh, maybe this guy's got something left in the tank.
But they paid him too much for an if.
Yeah, it's one of those cap casualties. But you've got to be able, unless that guy's a real good actor, you've got to have a sense for what their motivations are. And I feel like even some of the guys like Jason McCourty, even Kenny Britt, some of the veterans that they've brought in the latter half of the offseason, I feel like they're even buying, like, it doesn't, they don't say like they're here for a paycheck. Not that they would ever come out and say that, but they have the right mentality that they feel that something special is being built.
I think of any sport, football is the one where I think the players care the most because you have to. It's too dangerous. Mm-hmm. And it's like play professional football, you have to enjoy it. Unless you're like a kicker, you can hate football if you're a kicker and just be like, this is a good way to make money. But if you're playing any other position, you can't like just hate it.
Yeah. I mean, you even look at guys like, I mean, I grew up with some guys.
Some people do though, but I mean, it's tough to compared to like baseball or basketball, you just go through the motions.
I remember playing sports with guys and there were a couple guys that were like just really good, you know, like if they really wanted to commit themselves, they probably could have gone on to play at a higher level, but they like, you talk to them and they just don't like playing. You know, it's so weird that like you look at even a guy like, aren't there guys in the NBA that like don't want to come back or that retired early? Wasn't there a couple NFL players that retired, like Patrick Willis, I know retired early, but like there's guys that retire early, maybe just cause they don't love the game. You know, and it's so weird.
It's
that
grueling
you're like,
if you don't like it too.
Yeah, you're like someone with as much talent. Like I would kill to have the talent and the ability to make millions of dollars like you do. It's so weird that someone else doesn't value that.
Well, think if you play football or basketball or baseball or hockey or anything your whole life since you're like 3 or 4, and that's all you've ever done. You went to college, and your whole time in college was just football, and like your childhood was football or whatever sport. And now you get paid like $30 million. You're like, I don't need to do this anymore. Yeah. Just take the money and go.
Obviously, you're so committed that you're probably not enjoying life like in high school or college the way that people like us would. Obviously, people that aren't playing Division
I
sports.
Oh, it's so much fun. I remember you see athletes like, oh, I got to go lift at 6 a.m. or I have practice at 6 a.m. I was like, 6 a.m.? I can't even get up for my 9:30 class. And a lot of these athletes are doing it at schools that aren't high-profile schools. Most student athletes are at small schools. Imagine being like Pierre Garçon, for example, who went to like Mount Union.
Yeah.
He had to enjoy football because there's no full scholarships at D3.
Mm-hmm. It's like
it worked out for him, but man, to stick with it, you have to really believe you're going to go to the NFL and like love football. Yeah.
It's some serious dedication.
It's like 1920s athletes, like love of the game.
Yeah.
Bobby Jones.
You've got to have some serious dedication where you almost miss out on parts of that part of your, I would say probably the maturation process as well. So you get into,
and you have to grow up fast too.
Yeah. You get into guys like even Jamarcus Russell, like perfect example, a guy that got paid $60 million guaranteed. Well, and
that was
never
also the
had
fault
to do...
of the system, because if someone pays you $60 million to do nothing, it's like...
Yeah, but he's also, like, he got to the point where he's like, I don't have to work out. Like, I'm a millionaire, you know? So you're...
And it was guaranteed.
I mean, I guess any player can do that, but it's just falls back on the person of not really caring that much about the game. Like, Johnny Manziel, another example.
Guaranteed money for rookies is fine, but when it's, like, as much as it was for Russell and Bradford before they kind of, you know, capped it...
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be tough to show up if you were guaranteed $60 million.
Oh, you'd walk around with... I'd have the biggest swing in D,
like,
ever.
You're getting sacked by, like, J.J. Watt. You're like, nope, absolutely not. This
like,
is stupid.
Oh, thanks, J.J. Making...
That's where it's crazy.
However many dollars
Brock Osweiler still is like, I'm an NFL starting quarterback, and he's going to get paid $16 million this year, maybe not even step on the field.
When he's cut next year or this year, how many... like, what's the market value for Brock Osweiler if he's a free agent? Like, what, like, is he going to, he's going to be humbled
I
by what
know,
he gets.
I don't know, because the precedent is his own contract. And look at what Mike Glennon's getting in Chicago.
Would
it's almost like
get,
to get paid a lot, you have to either be a hyped backup or you have to be someone who's no one has really talked about in years, so you haven't played. So, like, Mike Glennon's probably still good. But, like, yeah, that's why Jameis Winston beat him out day one.
I know, and that's I'll never understand why Mike Glennon got $15 million. It's almost like the fascination of the unknown that we talked about earlier in these podcasts, with a known commodity versus, like, something you don't know. And
you need you need to be like Matt Flynn and have, like, one game of tape.
Yeah, like, if you're a backup quarterback, if you go in there, even Jimmy Garoppolo is another one that he hasn't played a lot, but, man, in the times that he's going to make some serious money.
Oh, yeah.
And for a guy like Mike Glennon, I mean, you really only showed it that first year before Jameis came along, and all he's done since then is just be a tall quarterback. So, like,
but that's
why
a hot commodity.
Apparently, why do you get paid $15 million to do that?
And they drafted Trubisky too.
Maybe that's why. But I mean, I guess he was like crying to the Bears after Trubisky.
Did you know
drafted.
Trubisky entered camp as the third string quarterback behind Glennon and Mark Sanchez?
The Sanchez.
And there's a lot of Chicago. I saw an article in, like, the Tribune or some Chicago site, and it was like, the more Mitch Trubisky talks, the dumber the Bears look. And it wasn't a reflection on Mitch. It was a reflection on they made him third string, and he's second overall pick.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Has he come out and had an interview or something like that?
He just said, like, yeah, you know, I'm, you know, working with a, you know, third team or whatever, but he's saying all the right things. But everyone's like, wait, what? Your third team?
They probably just don't. I mean, listen, my thoughts on all these rookie quarterbacks, same thing I think with DeShone Kizer, is every year we get the crop of first and second rounders that coaches will come out and say until they're blue in the face that they want to keep these guys on the bench and that they want to keep them raw. But when you're comparing the ceiling on guys like DeShone Kizer, ceiling on guys like Mitch Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, I'm sure, is probably already penciled in as a starter, or he will be soon. You look at the ceiling of those guys and getting them the reps that they need now versus the ceiling of someone, Cody Kessler, Tom Savage. Like, how far are those guys going to take you versus if we can get DeShone Kizer to the same-ish level now, what's he going to be in 8 weeks if he really finds his stride? You know, that's why I would always advocate for starting a guy with the higher upside, because if you bet, you win big. Bet big, you win big. There's no, like, DeShone Kizer, you start him week one. If he plays 500 football and just wins you a couple games here and there by week eight, you know, it could just click for him one day from that experience. And it may not, but I think you should always start the quarterback with the highest upside.
It is crazy because, I mean, obviously Hugh Jackson said Kessler's the early starter, but that doesn't mean anything because it's June. Brock Osweiler's looking good in camp because he's, you know, he's solid in practice.
I have to eat my words on that one.
Oh, yeah. But DeShone Kizer could easily be the week one quarterback. Like, he probably has the same chance as Kessler and Osweiler if he remains on. It's, like, equal.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be another open competition that's hidden as a, you know, competition.
Well, that's the problem I have with competitions, too. It's like you have three quarterbacks, which means you have none. So until you decide which quarterback you want to roll with, I mean, you're taking a, like, the Osweiler thing makes no sense. So if he plays well, he's your starter. So then what do you do with Cody Kessler and DeShone Kizer?
And do you start Osweiler knowing that you're not going to keep him next year?
And then what happens if Kessler's your starter? Do you make Osweiler your backup? Are you for sure not playing DeShone Kizer next year? Like, it's just causing, I think, more confusion in who they what they want to do at quarterback versus finding a guy that can actually play or getting a guy reps that might be the week one starter. I think, did you see that Schefter tweet about how a Browns player privately thinks that Brock could be the QB1 heading into training camp?
Was the player Brock?
It might have been.
Because it could funny. Have been.
maybe, but I think that's a...
He could. I mean, he has the most experience. And
I know. I'm
said not, he's looked good, I don't too. Think Brock Osweiler is a good quarterback. But what I'm saying is, compared to Kessler and Kaiser, who's never played in a game, and Kevin Hogan, of course, he's probably the most capable to be the starter. It doesn't mean the Browns are going to have the best season, but I think he's the most capable. So players on the team probably being around him, they're like, oh, because he's also older. He's a veteran. So it's like...
Yeah. They said he's looked good, which is just like...
But it's much different in practice. You know this, but in practice, when no one's touching you, and then in a game when... You know, the Steelers use their blitzes where it's like guys are dropping in the zone, rushing through, and it's you can't yeah. even.
Well, what are they
not even
run
comparable?
Are they going to run a read option with newborn giraffe Brock Osweiler back there,
just hobbling around?
Not a chance.
I don't know. I don't think there's really no need to keep him. I like keeping him in the sense where he can help the younger quarterbacks. But if you're not going to commit to him past this year, then it's like the most pointless
thing. You're taking
thing.
Away reps from like, unless exactly. Hugh's desperately trying to save his job or really doesn't think that DeShone Kizer can play right now. I think a lot of this praise of Brock has to do with the fact that they're trying to trade him.
I think they're trying to get someone to pay at least like $6 million.
Just butter him up, make him look, put some lipstick on that pig.
He's already a good looking guy.
Ship him off to like, the Jets CFL. Don't want him. The Jets are trying to go -4 and 20.
You think the Jets would want him if they're trying
you
to
think,
lose? But
no, they're
Josh
trying
McCown's
to get,
there to start.
They want Sam Darnold, so they're gonna go 0-16. I bet they go 0-16 this year.
Isn't it crazy to like? What if Sam Darnold comes out week one? Let's say the Jets are obviously tanking. Let's say they're like, all right, we want Darnold, and Darnold just is either horrible or just gets hurt. It's like you just wasted a whole – you just put – I mean, Jets fans are always going to go to the games.
Yep.
They're not going to stop going. Same with Browns fans, at least in the first half of the year. But it's like you're just wasting a season of everyone's time.
Yeah.
And the NFL, crazy. I mean, it's been around since like mid-four – or I mean, the NFL has been around since 1920, but like a more modern version, mm-hmm. probably since like 50 years ago. But – it's like it's not a permanent thing, and you're just spending a whole year.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if, like, a restaurant just made horrible food.
Well, it happened with the Clippers with Blake Griffin, remember? He tore up the tournament and then got drafted #1 overall and then tore his – or had knee troubles that first year. And then he had – I think he won.
Think about every
76ers
pick.
Right? Yeah, pretty much. I forgot they have Ben Simmons, too.
Didn't even play.
They might be pretty
good. He's still growing.
Yeah, that's creepy.
I mean,
is
like
it
19?
Nice to not
it's
talk
like
about the Cavs
like
draft lottery, though?
What?
I think it's nice not having to talk about the Cavs draft lottery again.
Well, yeah, because you get so – I was thinking about – so the MLB draft, we're recording this Monday. The MLB draft starts today on Monday. And it's like, oh, okay, the MLB draft is today? Or the NBA draft, like, basically the whole story of the NBA draft is, where's Lonzo Ball going to go, just out of curiosity?
I hope.
But the NFL draft is like its own – it's like secondary almost to the Super Bowl.
Oh, it's a huge spectacle. And it's, I think, excuse me. I think a lot of it has to do with the level of talent that comes out in the first three rounds
talent.
Of the draft. Yeah. For the first three rounds of the draft, you can get guys that'll start on your football team. Like that's what you're expecting out of them.
And football is the only sport where no matter what state you go to, you could find a college stadium that's like 100,000 seats.
Yeah. And when you look at basketball, I think a lot of it has to do – like the reason I don't like the NBA draft is because outside of five guys maybe, if that some years it's less, some years it's a little bit more. But once you get outside that lottery range, there's not a lot of guys that are that superstar type impact that they may start for you, but 80% of them are averaging – 7 minutes a game, like 2 points and one assist, one rebound. You know, like they're not even sniffing the floor because they can't they're just not good. The talent pool after the first 10 picks in the NBA is just a complete drop off compared to talent in the NFL. I think a lot of it has to do with the one and done rule. I've wanted the one and done rule gone. I think it should be, you should be able to come out of high school, and if you want to go to college, you have to go to college for 3 years. But if you think you can come out and play out of high school in the NBA, I think have at it.
But all this draft talk has given me a question to ask you about the Browns draft.
Oh boy.
So we can move away from basketball, Andrew.
That's fun. I'm sorry. I don't
out of the top five Browns picks, so Garrett, Peppers, Njoku, Kaiser, and Ogunjobi, do you think one of them is going to be a bust? Or do you think we have five starters? I mean, and Ogunjobi might be in the rotation.
I actually like the first five players a lot. Like, you look at last year's first couple picks, and I look at this year's first five picks, and like it's like they almost went kind of away from analytics and were just like, pick some damn football players and let's play.
You know, that is analytics, though, too.
I agree, but...
I mean, look at Njoku, like an athletic, tall, fast
Corey
tight end.
Corey Coleman. Who did they take in the second round?
Last year?
Corey Coleman.
Ogba and then Nassib.
Ogba, Nassib, then...
They took all award winners.
Yeah, and it's just even those guys didn't have, like... Ogba was good. I thought Ogba was a good pick, but Nassib, largely unknown, didn't know much about him. Even though
he was an award winner at Penn State.
Took a couple offensive linemen. Like, it was more like, even after you see the impact of that, their rookie year, too, they weren't necessarily the jump off the page type rookies that you should see on a team with so little talent. Like, there were no flashes from any of those guys outside of Ogba and Nassib a little bit early on. With this class, I feel like there's going to be a lot more ability for guys like Myles Garrett and Peppers especially to really shine.
You know, I love Jabril Peppers, so I don't think I think people say like, oh, he's going to be a bust. It's like, how? He was so good in college that they made him do everything.
He was so good, and a lot of people, myself included, look at the interception ratio to start, like the fact that he only had one interception. That's terrible. Not going to lie. But
I
he's
mean,
playing running
is
back.
Is it a big deal, though? His team did well.
Yeah, no, I don't. I kind of jumped the gun when I talked about that stuff because I honestly had probably the Michigan or I had the Ohio State shades on. You know, I was like, oh, Jabril Peppers.
Like an interception. I mean, if he's playing, because he was playing linebacker.
Yeah, and he's a hard-hitting athlete, and that's something that Browns need, like just a guy that's going to fly all over the field.
He doesn't need to get interceptions. He needs to just be involved in plays and pass breakups, pressures.
You know what I like? He's just a good tackler, like a fundamentally sound tackler, which I can't tell you how many times I've seen Browns cornerbacks just do that. Like, they just do that half-ass dive. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's a terrible attempt at an arm tackle. And Julius Peppers will come up and greet you, and that's what I like. That's what I want. I
you
want
mean
to see out of my Browns
Jabril
defense.
Peppers or Julius Peppers?
Did I say Julius Peppers?
Because it'd probably be both.
Yeah, I would say that answer works for both, but I'm...
You're watching a Browns game, you whiff, and then Julius Peppers comes up and says hello. Yep. I'm so confused.
I'm sorry. I do like Julius Peppers, though. He's pretty good.
I prefer Jabril now. A little younger, a little more energetic.
True.
But yeah, it was a lot of this, like, Ohio State bias, like, automatically. It was just, he stinks. He's no good. Like, well, he's pretty good. Like, you can...
Yeah.
There's... I'll never understand that. It's not like Jabril Peppers, like... was like, I will never play for an Ohio team. Go Wolverines. Like, he's from New Jersey. He lived in Michigan for like 4 years.
It's a, I mean,
and he went there because it was a high profile school to go play football. He didn't go there because he like bled yellow and blue.
If you care about like not playing with someone because you were enemies, like your teams were rivals in college, then I think you got
Tom Brady went to Michigan, and I don't see people like, if he shows his face in Cleveland.
Yeah, no one cares.
We had Braylon Edwards.
Football games, if he intercepts a pass and takes it for a touchdown, or takes the first kickoff for a touchdown,
that'd be nuts.
No one is gonna care. Like Braylon Edwards.
Yeah, we had Braylon Edwards, and I think we were probably too young to really. And that was like before social media was as big.
Oh, I remember Braylon.
No, I don't mean remembering him. I mean like social media wasn't as big then, so it's like you couldn't really get a good grasp on crazy people's opinions. So.
Well, I'd say at my dad's draft party, that's filled with some crazy people, and they didn't like it because they were like, oh, drafting Braylon out of Michigan. He's a Michigan.
But. Giant wide receiver who was fast. Given he has no hands.
You seen him now?
I have not.
He's like a body. He's a bodybuilder. His head, his biceps are like the size of his head. Yeah, it's crazy.
He's got a lot of time and money.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Michigan bias to me is just...
Remember when he punched LeBron's boy in the face and then he was traded like the next week?
That was crazy. Well, LeBron's basically like, LeBron is probably one of the most powerful people in the city. So,
like, what is Braylon thinking, man?
And the guy was tiny too.
Yeah. Oh well. Good times. Good times.
Man, punching LeBron's friend. Good time. Good time. We gotta get that level of fame.
No, I'm all right.
This is the resolution of the episode where everyone loses energy because it's 90 degrees in my house, in the land. But I want to ask you one final question.
There is just one more thing.
Final question is, it is mid-June, and since there's literally nothing going on, I'd like to have you have things be put on the record so I could bring them up in the future.
Oh,
will Brock Osweiler be on the Browns after the second preseason game?
Yeah.
You think yes?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
I didn't think so because at first, but now I think
so. It's not like the Browns said, we're trading him. The media was like, they're going to trade him. It's like, who did you ask? It's like, trust me. And then when you say, like, no one's held to their opinions anymore these days. It's like
you bring up like,
well, that's what I thought. Like, well, you just said it as fact.
And I get that. That's a good response. Like, yeah, obviously, we're not going to be right all the time. But if you're a guy like Nick Wright, always like Nick's like, he's very good at admitting, like, when he came into the Golden State series, I mean, he was like, Cavs are going to win in five. And then he's like, I wasn't wrong about LeBron. I was wrong about how, like, I didn't think Golden State was this good.
And sports. So it's like admitting you're wrong is fine because you have no control. Yeah.
It's like, why? I mean, obviously, you don't have to sit there and defend. Like, I think I tweeted one time that Kyrie was better than John Wall.
And he is.
Oh, I know. But some people, like, people were like, well, how could you say that? John Wall's so much better.
It's opinion based.
Well, I know. And so I just put the picture of, I just responded with the picture of Kyrie dot in the eye in Steph's face in game 7. And he was like, it doesn't matter. Russ is still better. Like, but I'm like, dude. I'm just saying. I think it's amazing how
any opinion you have on anything will be hotly contested by some other person. You could just be like, you know what? I really enjoy chocolate ice cream more than vanilla, and it's like you.
I couldn't handle having like more or Twitter followers that like responded to some of the idiotic things I say.
That's like. And I see people, and it's just you can if you just do @ and then someone like who has a lot of followers. It's horrible, and it's worse
for
women in sports. It's like brutal. It's like, what is wrong with these people? I mean, it happens to men too, but like, you have to give props to like female sports writers for years. Just have to deal with garbage from crazy people who are like, it's just the most ridiculous thing. It's like, what is wrong with you? This just she knows dumb. Infinitely more than you do.
Yeah, curmudgeon-y takes on like. Like you said, women in broadcasting.
Like Jessica Mendoza doing Sunday Night Baseball, who's a very intelligent broadcaster. Yeah. It's like they turn it on and they're like, bleh. Like, dude, no. And then they feel the need to tell other people about their hateful take that's just wrong.
Yeah.
I'm going to get on a 45-minute rampage about crazy people on Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, they're all there. The thing I don't understand is like, the thing I can't stand in social media nowadays is like how it's perpetuated guys like LeVar Ball to have a platform. All the terrible things that he said, whether it's about Kyrie's mother, whether it's the interview he did on with Colin Cowherd, like
basically
telling that woman to stay in her lane. Like, I mean, just it's appalling to watch this man talk, but yet he's given a platform at every turn because it gets views.
Well, think how it works. It's Stephen A. Smith will say something heinous, and it's just on Twitter. Like he said, what?
I don't get it, but
and then you put ads in those videos, and that's how money is made in the media world, my young friend.
We'll be right back with this ad brought to you by Big Baller Brand tennis shoes.
Big Baller Brand. I have a pair.
Steven, what kind of shoes are you wearing over there?
Well, I just spent my last $495.
Big Baller Brand shoes. I hate that, man.
He also tried out for the Lakers or worked out for the Lakers in James Harden's shoes.
They also said that they didn't love, like, they were like, I don't know if we draft him. Like, he didn't blow us away. So
I hope he goes to Milwaukee. I
hope he goes to, like, Brooklyn.
Just farthest away from LA as possible.
They're terrible. More like the Clippers. You know, he wants to play for the Lakers so bad, but he goes and plays for the Clippers.
I don't know. We're getting off topic. I think Brock Osweiler gets us both very heated, and he's the best segue. Like, when you come to talk about Brock Osweiler, you can go in any direction from ice cream flavors.
You truly can. The topic of our next five podcasts will be Brock Osweiler, and we'll let you know where they take
us. We're talking about Brock, but, you know, I saw this hot take on Twitter. But, alas, it was very hot in my house. Any final thoughts from you? Because there's, literally no Browns news right now. And I know something's going to break before I post this.
Yep, exactly. We'll have to re-record the whole thing. No, go Cavs. Cavs in seven.
After this, the series could be over by the time this is up. But
Cavs are going to win tonight, and then they're going to win game six, and then they're going to win game seven.
All right, if not, I'll just cut it.
All right.
Signing off, this is our 11th episode. Thank you for listening.